say my name until the city burns and the stars fade away and your scars don't hurt. I will hold you till the sun comes crashing down. I'm yours until the end of time.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Restored to More podcast, a listener-supported podcast that is dedicated to restoring marriages to wholeness in Christ after being affected by pornography and sexual brokenness.
After betraying Charity with pornography and unwanted sexual behavior, we had no idea how to rebuild our relationship or even if it was possible to restore what was broken.
Today, by God's grace, we have learned how to connect again, laugh again, and rebuild spiritual, emotional, and sexual intimacy to an even greater experience than before.
Our goal is that as you hear our story, the stories of others, and the knowledge needed to heal, you too can have a marriage that is becoming restored to more.
I'm yours until the end of time.
Update everyone. Course 1 registrations are back open. Whoop whoop. This is an 8-week course starting Thursday, September 14th that is designed to help you and your spouse start the journey to becoming restored to more. It will be led by R2M certified coaches, Cody and Michelle Larson. We will be focusing on how to cultivate safety and trust, healthy communication, deal with triggers, and begin to discover how God can use crisis to create closeness. You can see all the details on our website and can register today at www.restoredtomore.com/courses. Also, if you have appreciated this podcast, a great way to say thank you is leaving a 5-star rating and a positive review. These reviews help more people find the podcast and experience hope and healing.
Say my name until the city.
Hey guys, we are Glenn and Charity here. We are so excited to have you on our first episode. We are pumped. We are going to be sharing our story. We have been married for 6 years, and unfortunately there was some infidelity in our marriage. And we almost had a completely different result. And we are excited to be here together, sharing our story together. And hopefully it just gives you guys some hope.
Yeah, we're pumped that we're not one of the statistics. In Orange County, 72% divorce rate, and there's no question about it. We were heading down that path of being one of those stats.
Yeah.
Because of what I brought into our marriage. I am going to be interviewing Charity on this episode, learning about her past, what she went through, how she reacted emotionally. You are in for a ride, that is for sure. I want to just start by asking you, what is the biggest reason why you wanted to do this podcast and create this?
I think, you know, when I found out about everything that happened in our marriage 2 years in, it was hard. And I remember just feeling so alone and not knowing where to run, not knowing resources and tools to have. And I felt like there was just a lack out there, to be honest. I felt like I was searching, but couldn't really find anything.
Yeah.
And so when I saw that, I was like, hey, there needs to be more. And it really brought a lot of healing in my recovery process, because I had this hope like, hey, no, our story is going to end differently. We're going to help a lot of people. And that's what I held on to. And, you know, for me, it blows my mind how big this problem is. And it's just not talked about. I mean, give you a quick stat. There's 41% of married women have unfaithful spouses.
Wow.
That's over 30 million women. And in
that's crazy.
In the marriage, 72% of the women experience trauma from the betrayal. So that's over 21 million women. And so I'm like, man, I didn't even see that resource until 6 years into our marriage. And that alone, that statistic gave me hope, knowing that I wasn't alone. But I'm like, where are these women at? You know, I want to hear their stories. I want to hear what they went through or the things I'm going through. Are they normal? You know, I just wanted to I just wanted to feel normal. I wanted somebody to say, hey, what you're feeling is normal. And I went through it too. And you can overcome it. And you're going to overcome it. And I just hope that, I mean, we're not doctors. We're not therapists. So, you know, don't expect anything like that to come out of our mouths. But I think we're just two average people who overcame and are still overcoming a really crazy situation that happened in our lives with infidelity in our marriage. And I want to now share about it, to give other people hope.
That's awesome. I know for a fact that you're going to impact a lot of women.
Thanks, babe.
And I mean, I feel like I saw that firsthand. You started this whole thing kind of with the end in mind.
Yep.
Like it's what got you through those days when you weren't sure if you could make it. And it just, you know, pushed you forward was that goal that someday God's going to use this on a bigger scale. And you've been on this journey since we got married 6 years ago. We celebrated 6 years in August. And I mean, that kind of leads to my next question is that, you know, we were dating. I know we went through different programs and I even opened up about pornography being an issue in my past. I think I for sure made it sound like it was in my past and I was over that now. And I probably was a really good salesman, unfortunately. Did you ever think it would lead to here?
Oh my gosh, no way. When you told me that story, I was like, well, thank goodness that's in your past. Like that, there's no way. I mean, if I knew what I knew now.
Yeah, totally.
I just don't even know if we would have pursued dating because we were only dating, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, nobody thinks they're going to get married and then going to have a story like this. So I think there's no way I knew the extent of what was going on at all.
This is a totally off topic question. Mm-hmm. What would you tell a girl if you had a friend who was dating somebody and she found out he was like messing around with this kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Would you tell her not to date him? Or figure it out first before you commit to being married? What would you tell him?
Yeah.
What would you tell her? That's what I meant.
I think when we were dating, we were more and less than love. And so when you shared those things with me, I didn't really, I was like, oh, okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't think I even like
over your head.
It went totally over my head. I'm like, well, you're not doing that now. So it just, for me, my vision was blurred. And so I wish I would have ran to a couple people and had, you know, some perspective and guidance to say, hey, you know, should I be worried about this?
Yeah.
And so if somebody were to come to me and tell me that, I would say, well, girlfriend, don't put a ring on it until you know that you've seen him do some work.
Yeah.
If he's just done that, well, I mean, obviously, let's just even say there's no more, you know, struggle for him or whatever. Well, obviously, that's going to have some repercussion.
Yeah,
of,
totally.
You know, some dangers of insecurity and lack of confidence because of that incident. So I'm going to say, hey, has he worked on it?
Yeah.
And if he hasn't, date him while he's working on it and see what happens. You know, is it going to tear him up and he's going to run away and then it'll come out in your marriage? Or is he going to work on it? If he's going to work on it and talk to people about it and want to get better and want to get help, I would say, why not? Everybody's got their issues.
Yeah. But you're right. I think you see what you want to see.
100%.
You know, when you're dating, you see what you want to see. You know, especially when you're like, we were in lust more than love. I think for sure that's true. So do you feel like when you have these ideas about starting a podcast, and I know you're in the process of writing a book or a study guide and doing some cool video series. I mean, it's going to be crazy cool. We're going to talk about that too. But were you ever scared to share all this?
Totally. I was so scared to share it with people. And I personally think why I was so scared was for a couple of reasons. It's weird too, because you're in this like catch 22, you know, where I wanted help from people, yet at the same time I was worried about what they were going to think about our relationship and worried about what they were going to think about you. So I got really nervous.
Wow.
To talk to people about it because I don't want them to judge you, you know? It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird for sure. Like you should be like, screw you, buddy. Yeah. I don't care what anybody thinks about you, but you were concerned about that.
But I was concerned about, you know, what they're going to think of you and then are we going to lose friendships? Are we going to lose, which is, honestly, it was just an immature mindset because if I lost friendships, well, then yeah, that sucked, but then they weren't true friends anyways. So I think there was a lot of, me and you have been talking about this recently and I didn't even think about this, but I think that there's shame in not talking about it to people and you're scared to because nobody else is talking about it. And obviously it's a big issue. I just shared with you millions of women who are going through this. So the statistics don't lie. So it's scary to come vulnerable and open and transparent with vulnerability and authenticity with people that are probably going through the same thing as you are, but you don't even know that they are because they're not talking about it. So there's so much fear of the unknown.
Yeah. Totally. Thanks for sharing that. It's so true.
But I'm glad I'm sharing now.
Yeah, me too.
Because it's brought so much healing. Sharing has brought so much healing. Every time I've shared it with somebody, it only brought me greater friends, greater relationships, and revealed to me the ones I maybe need to not have deeper relationships with. It's been nothing but healing for me and for you.
Yeah, I think that's so awesome because it's so true. Like the very thing we're afraid of, actually it's been the opposite. Like we're like, oh, if people knew this,
100%.
They wouldn't be as accepting. And I mean, there are people, I think, that didn't know what to do with it. They're like, whoa, we didn't realize that you wouldn't know what to do with that, you know? But there was other people that just drew closer to us and prayed for us more and became even closer friendships through the whole thing too. And that we needed that, you know? So I believe it was about 18 months into our marriage when you first found pornography on my cell phone. I had created a Twitter account and was using that for pornographic images. Probably sucks to bring this back up. I'm sure you're like, you know, not want to dive back there emotionally. But can you walk me through that a little bit? What did you feel?
Totally. Well, it was crazy because you're not the social media guru. Like, you had a flip phone, which I never put two and two together. I thought you were just old school. But you had a flip phone when we were married, and come to know that that was because of pornography and not wanting to be tempted and things like that. Well, now you got a smartphone. I didn't think anything of it, right? I didn't think we needed to have blocks of anything. And, I mean, you were never on Facebook and Instagram and things like that, so I didn't really think anything about it. And then waking up one morning and seeing it in the kitchen, a Twitter account that you had created with all these just nasty images, I was shocked. I was like, there is no way this is my husband. Like, this cannot be my husband.
Just like disbelief.
Totally. I was like, you don't even know how social media works. I was like, the fact that you had a Twitter account, like, you had to, like, really do work. You know, it, like, shocked me. I was like, you had to create an account? Like, there's one thing to, like, look at something, but there's another thing to actually create an account. I was like, this is cannot be my husband. There's no way. I thought it, I didn't think it was you. But then seeing it, diving deeper into the images and looking at things around, I was just, ultimately, my body went into freeze shock mode, and then it went to outrage of anger, and I just wanted to kill you, to be honest. And I was so confused, so hurt, felt so betrayed and lied to. And then after that, I became a private investigator,
which we now know is normal.
Totally,
because now you're on this red alert. What else is he hiding? Mode. I remember getting on the phone with a pastor shortly after that because we had let some people know that was going on, and they opened up a door for us to talk to a pastor. And the advice, oh man, I get frustrated, you know, even thinking about this, because it was something that cared about us and we cared about him. And the advice was, Clinton, you need to memorize scripture. You know, there was a mindset there about, like, I need to work on stuff, and if I just memorized enough scripture, I'd be able to fight this battle.
Yeah.
That advice proved to be folly as well. Like, that wasn't right. I needed more help than that. And then he on the phone told you, you know, Charity, this is also your responsibility, that you need to just wear him out sexually. And if you have sex with him all day long, he won't be tempted. Obviously, that pastor had no idea what sexual addiction is even all about. I'll talk about that on my end. But, you know, talk to me about your side. I mean, knowing what you know now, that advice is given to a lot of women across the country, across the world.
Yeah. Well, I think it was so hard because me and you, obviously we didn't want this in our life. We didn't want it in our marriage. So that's why we were reaching out for people for advice and for help, right? And we were hoping that they were going to give us valuable resources that were going to help in this, so that we could have an awesome, fruitful marriage.
100%.
That was going to last.
Yep.
Unfortunately, we got, you know, like you were saying, Bible verses. And I think one of the hardest parts, too, is that we were counseling couples together. So I was hearing the advice that they were giving to us, or to you even, and being like, well, how come that's not working? you know, where you would try, because you were actively trying. I mean, you were trying to.
Oh, yeah. I made
read scripture and you were going out there.
I made 3x5 note cards. I remember exactly. This is the season when I made verses note cards. Yes. I was walking around the neighborhood looking like a crazy person. You're right. I did everything he told me to do.
And then other guys that we, you know, you talk to, they would say, hey, just get over it. You know, like, just block some stuff on your phone and your computer and you'll be good. You know, just do it. It was like, hey, just man up and do it. So now here's another thing of advice. And I'm hearing that and I'm like, yeah. So now I'm thinking, just do it. Like, why are you just getting over it? Yeah. And then we get a third perspective, outsider's advice of, hey, wear them out, you know, like spice it up, you know, and
have sex more.
Yeah, 100%. And that perspective was then, okay, I'll do it. You know, because we were at a point where we were so willing to do whatever it took.
Yep.
After discovery of massage parlors and strip clubs in our marriage, I was so willing to do whatever it was so that we didn't have to end in a divorce.
Yeah, this is before that, though.
Yes.
This is actually way before you found out that stuff. This is just simply pornography. We get on the phone and then, you know, the pastor tells you to wear me out.
Yeah. So, just even saying that, though, I mean, it was hard hearing different perspectives from people, because then I put that on you saying, like, what's wrong with you? Why, you know, so I just didn't understand. There's such a gap between people telling us things, us doing it, and then it not working. It was just so confusing and it was so tiring. And then I would get mad at you because I didn't understand. I thought there was something wrong with you because nobody was treating you and helping you, right?
Well, now I know there was something wrong with me. I mean, you're like, yeah, you're right. Assumption is correct. There's something really deeply wrong with me. But yeah.
Sorry, to answer your question, long story short, is, you know, that advice really hurt. Because it now made it seem like it was my problem. And so once I did do that advice, and then realized that you were acting out after the fact of even us being intimate, I was so confused. I was like, what is going on? How could you look at pornography right after we're intimate? Like, what? It just didn't even make sense to me. I'm like, am I not good enough? Am I not doing things? Like, I thought I was going to be the solution to the problem. And I was like, if I can be the solution to the problem, somebody's telling me that I can be the solution to the problem, awesome. Like, let's get this thing rolling. I'll do whatever we can. But the fact that it wasn't working, I changed who I was. I was changing how we were intimate. I was changing so much.
Yeah, you're getting uncomfortable. You're doing things
out of my comfort zone.
You wouldn't normally do.
No.
Yeah.
And so it was a rough, rough season. And then I started doubting myself. It was just hard.
That's so tough. I look back at that season. I hate that season. I had a lot of seasons in our past 5 years. But I look back and the mindset was just so off, you know, because what we know now is, like, sex is the pinnacle of intimacy. Yeah. And intimacy is not sexual. Like, sexual intimacy is just one type of intimacy.
Totally.
Among a list of like 12 or 13 different types of intimacies.
Yeah.
And really, sexual intimacy is the pinnacle. It's where you've been intimate in everything else, in emotional, spiritual, I mean, there's so many different areas. And then really sexual intimacy is the way you can celebrate other intimacies. And the way we were treating sex, it took all the intimacy out of it. I mean,
I felt like if by the end of it, I mean, I was just a tool to get a job done.
And that's so sad. That's so sad.
Yeah, I know.
It's terrible. And then what happened is that I remember looking back, and even after I was acting out, you know, let's say we hadn't had sex for a couple days or a few days. And I've heard a lot of guys say this. This is very common. They say things like, well, if we just would have sex more.
Totally.
And I was literally blaming you. I was doing the blame game. And I literally was saying, well, you know, Chair, the reason why I looked at porn this week, I mean, yes, I know I shouldn't have done it. But do you know it's also been 3 or 4 days? And he told you to wear me out. And now, oh man, it just makes me sick.
Yeah.
Because that was not the solution to this problem.
No.
It might be yours if you're listening to this.
But it made our solution worse.
It made ours worse. And I said that, but I take it back. It's not the solution. The solution is not external.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think that's the difference, is that a lot of people are trying to change the external. We're trying to pull weeds, and we're not willing to get down and uproot what's causing sexual addiction, 100%. What's causing guys to reach out, to have a pornography addiction, to yep. have a masturbation issue, to be married and yet having girlfriends on the side or hookup partners or being on these adult affair websites. I mean, all this stuff is going on right now, and it's not because they're not having sex enough. So unfortunately, I didn't stop there because, I mean, I love what you put it just now. I was like, you're right. We were trying to get help, and we were actually doing the things we were told to do, but it wasn't working. And so I just relapsed again and again and again and again. And after so many relapses, I just started hiding it from you. I just started being like, yeah, like, you know, I can't tell her anymore. I knew it was just going to break your heart. And so I wasn't getting help. I wasn't getting better. And then you just kind of found out more things later on. And I guess, one question I want to ask is, during that whole season, did you have people to reach out to? Did you have family or friends, or did you have anybody else besides, people we just talked about to run to, or what did you do with that?
No, I didn't have anybody. Again, because nobody else was talking about this stuff, so I didn't want to be the girl to bring it up. I felt like I was so alone. Now, after knowing those numbers, obviously I'm not alone, but I just felt so alone. I didn't have anybody to talk to. So I really, what I do best is I'm an imploder, which means that I put everything deep down inside of me. Mm. And unfortunately, if you do that long enough, it will start to wreak havoc on your body. And that's what I did.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I mean, that's what happened. I mean, just to get there, because I want to ask you that question of what happened to you physically and emotionally, spiritually, all that. It was such a dark time for you. So stuff comes out later on, and I hadn't changed. And so we were recommended to go to this intensive Christian counseling in another state. And we went. I remember there was some major breakthrough on my end. I don't think there was a lot of support on your end. They didn't talk about things that we talk about now. But I mean, if you want to share about that, what did you walk away from that with? What was it that, because you could have left, right? I mean, I think a lot of women would have left.
Yeah.
I mean, most women would have left. Mm-hmm. And yet you decided still 3 years into our marriage, you're still going through this, to go to this, or 3 years into our marriage. 4 years in a marriage? I don't remember. But now you're going to this Christian counseling, and you're walking out of there and you had a little more hope. It felt like you weren't thrown in the towel just yet. What happened at Christian counseling that made you not give up?
Well, first of all, I mean, going into it, I was pissed because there was another self-discovery of massage parlors acting out. And so now finding that out for the second time in our marriage, I was just pissed. And, up until that moment, I was sad about everything that was happening leading up to that point, but I had never really taken the time to process what was going on. And so now I just come to this place where I'm still not processing, and now we're being told to go to a ranch, and I'm literally 35 weeks pregnant.
Yeah.
I mean, who wants to go on a plane 35 weeks pregnant? Nobody.
You literally had to get a doctor's
note. It was terrible. And I was just so mad at you. And to be honest, I really didn't think I was going to come out of there with any change. I thought we were going to come home and I was going to be divorced. I remember literally before we had got on that plane, I was picturing my life without you. I was picturing me a single mom with two boys, thinking about how to survive with two, thinking of financially, how would I do it? What would my life look like? Just everything. Would I move in with my parents? What would they think? I literally planned my life, what it would look like, would I remarry, which is so crazy to think about. Mm. And so that was my mindset and perspective going into it. Because if nothing had changed up to that point, I really didn't have any hope that it was going to, that this one meeting, a couple times, a couple was going to save our marriage, to be honest.
Yeah.
There were so many conversations where I had heard you, I'm going to change. This is the last time, I promise. And me continually finding things time after time after time made me so numb to me actually believing that you were going to change. So that when you said it, I was like, yeah, whatever. Yeah. I'll do this. Sure. I'll go. Whatever. You know, so I got to this place where it was just, okay, I'll do it for you. Mm. So we went, and it was a really cool moment at the ranch where you finally had come to realization that you had been cheating on me, you know, 4 years into our marriage, constantly, you know, every single day, you know, looking at these other women and having sexual pleasure from them. And it was a crazy moment because I remember you looking at me and you bawling your eyes out, realizing the denial had broke right there.
Yeah, no, that was one of the most intense moments of recovery is when, you know, we were counseled by another couple, and the woman looked at me and she said, you know, Clinton, how do you feel knowing that you've cheated on your wife since you've been married to her? And the justification popped out and the evil popped out. And I said, well, you know, I haven't really been cheating on you. There hasn't been intercourse with another woman. And I think it was there that it was like almost like, you know, you say something and you just wish in that moment you could grab the words and shove them back in your mouth. But the truth came out. It was like, there it is.
Yeah.
You don't believe you're cheating on her. And I could see it in this woman's eyes. I could see it in her husband's eyes. And she looked at me and goes, is that what you think Charity believes? And she was like, look at your wife. Look at Charity. Do you think she thinks you're not cheating on her? And you were sitting there and your eyes were teared up and you were crying. And in that moment, I knew that you believed I was cheating on you every single time. It was an emotional affair. It was a physical affair with these images and these women and different mediums. And it didn't matter at all if I had had intercourse or not. Parts of my heart and my soul and my mind were invested, and they weren't invested in you. Mm-hmm. And vows were broken. A covenant was broken, not once, thousands of times. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the most intense moments for me to actually like accept that and to go, you're right, I've been cheating on you.
It was a cool moment for me too, because I remember looking at you and you were weeping, right? And so I was like, finally he broke, because at that point there was just nothing, you know? But one of the coolest moments I think that you just reminded me of when we were sitting on that couch for me was when she said that, it finally allowed me to be okay with me being cheated on. Because nobody else worded it like that. And so it reminded me in that moment to say, it was like, oh my gosh, yes. Somebody finally
gets it. Yeah.
Like, because I've been questioning this whole time, why is this hurting? And granted, yes, there was more things than just pornography. Okay, so. Yeah,
totally.
You know, where people.
Like you said, strip clubs. Massage parlors, different accounts, different things.
Yeah. So for me, lap dances, you know, I mean, there was
physical interaction.
Yes.
With other women.
Yes.
100%.
Not sexual intercourse, but other things. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, granted, that is cheating, right? But when she said even pornography was cheating, I was like, yes, finally somebody gets it, because nobody else is talking. It was like when you say pornography, it's like, yeah, well, every guy does it. Justification, you know, and it's like, well, that's normal. Guys do it. And I'm like, yeah, but it hurts. Yeah. And I want to know that it's okay that it hurts and not feel crazy for the fact that it hurts. And so when she said that, it allowed me to sit in my pain and go, yeah. That is what he's doing. That is why it hurts so bad. But nobody talks like that.
And we deny it.
Because if nobody's talking like that, then we deny it. We shove it in. We say, oh, no, it's okay. Yeah, he's addicted to pornography. He looks at pornography, but I'm fine. It's his thing. It's like, no, you're not fine.
Yeah.
You know that hurts you. Because God did not create sexual intercourse and marriage and the bond of marriage to look like that.
Preach. Preach it. And that's what I saw, right? In that moment. when I looked over at you, because you just said you allowed yourself to feel that pain was all over your face and your body. And I believe that's what led to us coming back, you know, because what happened was, I wonder if in that moment you actually allowed yourself to feel versus shoving it down, shoving it down, shoving it down, never telling another woman or girl what you were feeling.
100%.
You cried a little bit here and there and you were sad, but you just shoved it down. The imploded. 100%. So we came back from this counseling and I was getting some work done. I started going to an open share group. I started going to a therapist, a 12-step program. I got a sponsor. But even though I had started to recover, and you know, a lot of guys have a similar story to me where it's like, it's not just make a decision and then start healing and no relapses. It was like 15 days of sobriety and then a relapse, and 30 days of sobriety and then a relapse, then 60 days and then a relapse. And I know that took a toll on you as well, but I would have thought, okay, look, I'm doing better. So you're doing better.
Yeah.
You got worse.
I got really bad.
Your physical body, I mean, it started to like deteriorate in front of my eyes and your eyes. I mean, talk to me about that. What was going on physically with you as we came back from that counseling and you started actually allowing yourself to feel?
Yeah. So I think, you know, exactly what you said, you know, when we were at this ranch, I finally opened up myself to say, hey, I'm ready to feel the pain. And because for such a long time I was numbing it and just shoving it down. And it was really hard to always, whenever you would ask me like, hey, are you doing okay? Do you want to talk to somebody? I'd be like, no, I'm fine. And yes, an employer does that. But also at the same time, I read in a book and it was incredible, but in Sexually Addicted Spouse, an incredible book, but it talks about how, which totally just made me feel better, but it says the high levels of neurochemical arousal that induce feelings of fear, anxiety, panic, and terror wreak havoc on the important functioning region of the brain known as the Broca's area, the area we rely on to translate our feelings into words. That's why it's so difficult putting our experiences into words, and sometimes it remains blocked for deeper emotions. And I remember like trying to explain it to you, but it was so hard, and I didn't understand why. I was like, why is this so hard to like really help you understand what was going on inside of me? And that's exactly
why. I don't think even you understood what was going on inside of you.
No,
you read this and it was like that put words to your
feelings. That put words to my feelings, and it just made me feel like, okay, just even better, you know, about what was going on.
Yeah.
So, you know, amidst that, I remember just coming home and having, you know, our two kids at that time, and just feeling so sick to my stomach. And at that point, I stopped eating because it was the only thing I felt like I could control, to be honest. I felt like my life was out of control. I felt like you were out of control. And I felt like the only thing that I could control was my eating. It was the one thing that wasn't going to hurt me. It was the one thing that wasn't going to betray me. And I knew that I liked having a feeling of control. So I stopped eating. And I had gotten to a place where I was now 116 pounds, which I hadn't been since high school. I was so thin. None of my clothes were fitting me. I started developing really bad sciatic nerve pain. I started losing clumps and clumps of hair. I mean, we're talking like so much hair. I remember being in the shower and just like looking at the bottom of the shower and just was like in shock, saying, there's no way this, no, like what is going on? I remember looking in the mirror after blow drying my hair and seeing just bald spots, and it was just terrible. I remember looking at myself in the mirror and seeing all this acne, and it was like just my whole body was falling apart.
I was freaking out.
I remember my mom looked at me and she said, Charity, you're balding. You have like patches of hair that's missing. You're the thinnest I've ever seen you. And you're losing a sense of joy. What is going on in your home? And I was like, oh my gosh. Like, I can't keep it in anymore. Because the more I'm going to keep it in, I'm going to have a heart attack. I'm going to die, you know?
Yeah.
It's what stress does to your body is crazy.
Oh, yeah. You're probably going to develop shingles. And
oh, my goodness. Of course.
You're going to have a heart attack or something.
So it was crazy because I was having all these, and I started having anxiety. I remember having nightmares. I remember having flashbacks. I remember just blocking things out at times, trying to like dive deeper into what was going on, what had gone on in our relationship, and just like, why have I blocked these things out? Like I started losing my memory. Oh my gosh, I was losing things.
That was crazy.
All the time.
Yeah, you were
and
tripping.
I remember starting sentences and not being able to finish them.
Yep.
And that was totally just not me, and I couldn't believe it. There were so many things that were happening inside of my body, and that's when I looked at you and said, hey, my mom's noticing, people are noticing, and I feel like I am having an inside heart attack without a heart attack. I feel like my body is telling me, hey, you need to do something or something bad's going to happen.
So what'd you do?
So I started researching everywhere and everything. I was going into Google, typing pornography. I was typing in the Bible app pornography, and I found this awesome book that she had a similar story about us and what we had gone through. And I read her Bible study, and I bought her book and started reading her book. And I realized that she was actually a therapist out of Newport Beach, and called her up on the phone and started seeing a therapist in Newport Beach, and started going to a couple different programs and working on myself, going through a book and a workbook, and started opening up. We started talking to people at that point, which was incredible, and just slowly got on the road to recovery and healing.
You know, I remember you like telling me that you're reading this book and it was connecting with you, and yeah, you're realizing what you're going through.
Yep.
Up to this point, I mean, it's sad to say, like, you're like, you know, her mom is noticing all these things, but I wasn't. Mm. That's what's crazy. That just shows you how much of an addict I was. Mm. I didn't know you were skinny. Mm. I didn't know you were losing hair. I remember you telling me, like, look, I'm balding. I'm like, oh, really? That's what that is? Like, it's just wild to show you how, I mean, what's that called? Where I was just so into my own journey and what I was going through and the work I was doing. And, you know, I know it was good work I was doing as far as recovery goes, but I just was oblivious to whatever you were feeling. And so then you were like, I've lost weight. I'm losing hair. I'm having acne. Look at my face. Like, mm-hmm. And I was like, wow. And I was like, what's going on? And you were like, what's going on? Like, I'm you, like this mm-hmm. whole thing. Because, and it was odd for me because, again, remember, for 6 years, well, I guess it was not, for 5 years, this is about a year and a half ago, so, or 2 years ago. So
I'd
for
say, yeah, 4 years.
4 years. This hadn't affected you. I mean, I would even tell you I messed up, and you go, oh, how are you doing? And I go, well, I'm doing better now. Good. You know, that was it. That was our conversation, so I never knew. So it was the first time I came face to face with, like, oh, my gosh, this is really affecting my wife. And I think that's what made me dive even more into recovery, because I was really seeing that this needed to change, you know?
Yeah.
And I was seeing the pain. And I really do think seeing your pain motivated me to get better. Just like at the recovery or at the counseling, when I saw that it was cheating on you and I saw your pain, I wanted to confess that and ask for forgiveness. And that was a powerful moment. And now again, a few months later, I'm seeing the pain it's causing you, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I literally thought, I was like, she might die. Mm. Like, you might commit suicide, or you might have a heart attack, or you might, you know, just live in a hole your whole life. And
I became a completely different person.
Oh, there was no light about you. There was no joy. There was just this black hole. I didn't even want to be around you.
I became depressed.
You were, yeah, I mean, totally. You don't want to leave the house. You didn't want to get off the couch. You told me, I don't want to get out of bed.
Yep.
And I was like watching kids for a couple
days. I know, we had a newborn.
Yeah. I think if we didn't have a newborn, you wouldn't have gotten out of bed. I think you kind of had to. She had to feed a newborn.
Yep.
That was an intense, intense period for sure, where you started work on yourself and I started realizing this is going on. Talk to me about that journey a little bit. I think you realize a few things. There were some words and different stuff you understood more. And then there was things you realized that, you know, this is why the podcast is coming to existence. You also realized some stuff that you were not. Mm. you know, as far as, you know, a lot of times the whole codependent stuff. Let's focus on the first part of the question. What was it you realized? What were some words that you really connected with?
Yeah. Well, it was crazy because before, when somebody would ask me, how am I doing? I wouldn't have these words to explain. Hmm. So when I heard them and then read the symptoms of them, I was like, oh my gosh, I identify with that. That is what I'm feeling. That is what I have. And yeah. So cool to finally, when somebody would be like, oh, why are you acting like this? You know, or why are you doing that? I'd be like, oh, well, because I actually have PTSD. Mm. And there's these things called triggers that when something happens, if I am in the mall and I'm walking by Victoria's Secret, I all of a sudden experience high anxiety, sweaty palms, I freak out, and sometimes even get flashbacks and memories of things that happened in the past. Well, beforehand, if I didn't educate myself, I wouldn't have known what I was experiencing, why I was experiencing what I was experiencing. And normally, we would even get in an argument in the mall for a random thing that wasn't about Victoria's Secret. Nope. And then me and you would look at each other and be like, why are we even arguing right now? Right?
Yeah, it was about Wetzel's pretzels.
And I didn't even know myself because I hadn't done enough education and self-discovery and self-awareness of what was actually going on inside of me, when in reality what was occurring was I had walked by something that was triggering and it gave me feelings that were terrible. And so I then acted and responded on those feelings and took it out on you. Where now I can say, hey, you know, I'm experiencing XYZ because we just walked by, you know, blah, 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 a girl with a shirt, low cut with boobies hanging out and short shorts. And I just got triggered and I need you to know that right now I don't feel safe. And so can you, you know, help me feel safe? You know, whatever it is, XY, you know, but so there were things that I started educating myself on that were incredible to make me just feel normal and made me feel confident with what was occurring rather than a crazy person. Because if somebody were to have told me like, oh, you have PTSD, I'd be like, no, that's only for war veterans who come back from the war and like can't get back on their feet. I wouldn't have thought that that was what I had. But reading it in the book, all the symptoms just made so much sense to me where I was like, oh my gosh, this makes complete sense. This is exactly what I have. And I think another thing too, which is pretty crazy, that helped me have reassurance to my actions, because sometimes you feel like a crazy person because you become this completely different person. But again, in the same book, it talks about how being a private investigator is totally normal. And some people would see that as codependent. So, but for me, I do not believe that I'm codependent. I believe that I face relational trauma because somebody that I loved and cared about and told me was going to protect me from harm and danger, you know, and conquer and fight the enemies and not let anything touch us, you know, create lifelong memories together, right? That was our
unified
vision, you know,
mission.
As a married couple. And so when you find out about addiction and pornography,
betrayal,
like all of that gets broken because of betrayal and because of lies. Like lies specifically are so traumatic because you feel just duped. You feel like you've been hiding all this stuff from me, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've heard so many more times, so many therapists and different stuff I've read and listened to. It's like, it isn't even about the physical cheating. It isn't about, you know, I mean, those are bad and there is definitely repercussions from that, but it's the emotional affair. It's the intimacy and the affair of that gets broken, because there was all these covenants that were made and these vows that were said, and all that just gets shattered when there is any kind of betrayal.
100%. And so for me, when I read this in the book, it said, safety-seeking behaviors are checking partners' pockets, wallets, cell phones, and computer history, trying to verify their whereabouts, tracking devices to monitor their location. This normally gets labeled as codependent, or that you're addicted to your spouse, when in reality, it is just a normal response to relational trauma.
Well,
let me just repeat a little bit of what I just said again so that you can know, like, what I just said, because it's a big deal. when in reality, it is just a normal response to relational trauma, trying to find safety and protection in your relationship and life. Pause. I felt unnormal when I was doing those things. Mm. I felt like a crazy person when I'd be like, hey, where were you? Mm. Really? Or I'm calling you three times and you don't answer. Or I'm texting you, you know?
Yep.
There was, or I'm going on the computer, or I'm going on your phone. I'm looking through your emails. I became a private investigator, right? And I felt so unnormal. So in the book, it says, the addiction model says that when a partner checks the computer for new evidence, he or she is attempting to control the addict's behavior and could be considered codependent. A trauma perspective says the partner is scanning his or her environment for signs that the source of the precious trauma has returned and he or she is in danger.
Wow.
How good is that?
That's so good. That's so good. And I mean, I'm grateful that you've shared this stuff with me before, because I remember getting angry. And we're going to talk about this in a whole nother session.
Totally.
But what's needed on your end? I can't get angry. I can't go, hey, don't touch my phone. Hey, don't touch my computer.
Oh my gosh, I would touch your phone all the time. We get in so many fights over it.
And I remember after I understood this stuff, I was like, here's my phone.
Yep.
Here's my credit card. Here's my passwords. And what that did for our relationship was it went leaps. We grew trust leaps and bounds. I think a lot more than a lot of people, because there was this total openness. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't right away. It took a lot of time. Now we have total transparency. You know everything. There's nothing I'm hiding.
Totally.
Which I think is why we could even be sitting here together. But I remember being mad at you. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Just trust me. I'm working on my ish, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not, that's, I think most men don't understand. It's totally normal. And it's not about trust. Hey, who the H-E double hockey sticks are we to demand trust from you anyway?
Preach it.
You know what I'm saying? But
I think you give up that right when you do that.
100%.
They put it another way, which I want to share this really quick before we get to the next question, because I just think it's so amazing. But they said, another example of this is when you are searching for strangers in the backseat of one's car in the weeks after being carjacked.
Mm.
This is a normal response to trauma. And just to get it off of our topic, right?
Yeah.
To help me better understand what I was going through and why I was responding the way I was because of trauma in my life. It's called relational trauma. And that's why I was doing the things that I was doing, just like any other trauma that happens in your life. If you had a huge earthquake that shattered things in your home, you know, and ruined things, if another earthquake happened, you would freak out because you would 100%. Your past experience would start be triggering.
I think about guys that I know in the military, and they've you know, they were around things that happened suddenly. They have this acute awareness of things that are off. And, you know, maybe like you say, checking a computer, these guys always sit facing the front door mm-hmm. of the diner. Mm-hmm. You know, they, everywhere they go, when they go to the mall, they are scoping out every person. You know, when they go to a movie theater, they walk up and down both sides of the theater. Why? Because they're scanning, going, are we safe?
Yep.
Are we safe?
Yep.
Is everything okay? You know, they're scanning the roads, they're scanning the cars, and it's because they have a crazy past of seeing cars blow up when they were, you know, in the Middle East. They were around things that happened when there was a terrorist attack. You know, they were around these kinds of things, and it's so, and there's trauma.
Yeah.
And all they're doing is what you said. They're just going, are we safe?
The only reason I was doing that is because I felt like I was in danger. And so I wanted to make sure that I was safe.
Yeah.
And that is the difference between codependency and relational trauma. And anytime somebody would put codependent on me, I just personally did not like it, because I knew that your problem was your problem. I just wanted help. I wanted you to get your help, and I wanted me to get my help.
Yeah.
I knew that I didn't need you.
Yeah.
And I knew that you knew that.
Okay, we got to transition. We've been on this topic for a long time. We obviously are very passionate about this. and very excited to share hope and to share wisdom. And again, we honestly, we're just stealing everything we've read in these books and different podcasts and therapy sessions and meetings groups. And so again, we're not the, you know, we're not the, what am I trying to say?
End all be all.
Yeah, we're not the pros here. We're just sharing with you what we've learned and just being transparent about it. Chair, one thing that you have been amazing at is you have believed there is a silver lining in this whole thing. And I just want to ask you what you're excited about now. Where do you see this whole thing going? You know, we are doing this podcast. You're doing some other stuff. What are you excited about?
I am just so excited to continue to grow. I don't think I've ever grown more than the past 2 years. Even though it was really, really hard.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if I'd make it out alive, to be honest. I feel like I sometimes was bleeding, figuratively speaking, right? I feel like so many times I was bleeding so much, I didn't know if I was going to be able to.
Like you just didn't know if you had anything left?
No.
You're just like, I don't know if I can go another day like this.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm just really excited for continual growth. I'm really excited for us. I'm excited to continue to I'm excited to continue to strengthen our relationship, to build more intimacy together, to learn what that even looks like. I feel like me and you are on a new journey of restoration, redemption, new beginnings, new memories, new relationships. And I'm just really excited to unravel that, to learn about that, and to continue to just grow as individuals and to continue to use our story to help other people.
Do you want to tell people where we're at now? I mean, just give them a little bit of hope. You know, this is a lot of intense.
Yeah, it was.
What the ugly part? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't want to, if you just want to give anybody listen to this a little bit of hope, I won't say anything. How would you describe our relationship today?
I would describe it as night and day different. And I would take our relationship right now where we're at over any part of where we have been in our past, even to dating, because I finally feel like I know you and you've let me into your life and you've let me into your feelings and vice versa. And we are at a place in our life right now where we are teammates, man. Yep. Yep. I mean, we constantly look at each other and we're like, this is fun.
High five and smacking each other's butts.
Kissing all the time.
Whoa, babe, calm down. Calm down. Keep this thing cheery.
You know, but we're giggling all the time because there's no secrets.
Yeah.
We're going to share a lot more in podcasts of, you know, different episodes about how we've gotten there and how we rebuilt intimacy in the recovery process and boundaries and all that stuff. But, you know, we are completely different people now, and you really let me into your life, and we are finally able to put words to what we're experiencing, and we're coming alongside each other to help each other.
Mm.
I think that's the coolest part is before,
yeah,
it was so hard for us to communicate what was going on, if we needed something, if we needed help from one another.
Yeah.
And man, isn't that what marriage is all about? There's two of us, you know, totally. You're not supposed to do everything. I'm not supposed to do everything. We're here to help each other out. When you have a bad day, let me help. When I have a bad day, you help me, you know?
Yep.
And we never did that before.
Well, we were the problem.
Oh my God.
You can't run to the problem to fix the problem. Right.
So just knowing like how much you worked on yourself, I've worked on myself individually, is bringing us together and closer more now than we've ever been. And I love where we're at.
Mm.
It is just the truest of intimacy. We say all the time, intimacy is into me, you see.
Yep.
And I love that. And that's where we're at.
Mm.
And we're building upon that every single day.
I just got to add one thing. I think it's so cool that we have done some little trips here and there with our family and done some little staycations and a trip up to San Luis Obispo and just different things we have planned. We did Disneyland, stayed in one of the hotels, and we have a couple concerts coming up. We're excited about a couple trips we have coming up. And just to know that those aren't tainted by addiction.
Come on.
Everything else for the past, well, not the past year and a half, but before that, everything's been tainted by addiction.
Yep.
everything we've done together, even building a business together, raising kids together, you having sepsis every time after giving birth, you know, these were all good times and bad times. And unfortunately, they were all tainted by addiction and betrayal.
Yep.
Even more so betrayal than addiction, you know? So to know that's not where we're at is pretty stinking awesome.
It's pure.
Last question. I am guessing there are tens of thousands of women that are going to listen to this podcast. You said 40,000 something women?
No, I said 21 million are experiencing trauma.
21 million are experiencing trauma.
Yeah.
And we know that this is the fastest growing addiction right now in America. Pornography addiction, sexual addiction is the fastest growing addiction. So there are going to be millions and millions more women that go through potentially something similar. What would you want to tell the women that are listening to this right now that are feeling similar things to what you experienced?
I would want to tell them that you are not alone. That there is hope and there is light at the end of the tunnel. You're going to get through this. It may seem like you can't get through right now. And it may seem like you just want to curl in your bed and just cry. And not know if you're ever going to be able to get out. But you're going to. You will. And just know it's going to take time. Know it's going to be a work in progress. Right now, you know, you have wounds that are totally open and bleeding. And just know that if you can experience healing, you're going to be able to tell people one day about those scars and that they're battle wounds. But when people look at them, they're not going to hurt and they're not going to sting. And you're going to be able to say, let me tell you about this one. Gosh, this one got me through one of the toughest times of my life, but I'm stronger, way more stronger coming out of it than I was in it. And you're going to give so many more other people hope because of your story of overcoming. This is just a chapter in your story. Your story is not over, my friend. Mm. You have so many more chapters. This is just chapter 5. I am so excited to hear your chapter 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Oh my goodness. This is not over. And you have so much more to give and so much more to share. And you're going to be able to be strong enough to get through this and make it out.
I'm yours until the end of time.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, follow us on Instagram, and sign up for the upcoming course. You can also connect with us on the Ask Us Anything page at RestoredToMore.com. Also, quick note, all the work at Restored to More Inc., including this podcast, is made possible by our donors and financial partners. We wouldn't be here without those who have generously given to the cause of restoration. If you ever feel led to give, you can do so on the donate page on our website. Say my name.